We are on the eve of celebrating Snan Yatra, which takes place 2 weeks before Rath Yatra. And these are very important observances, and especially for we who are following the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we want to understand Lord Chaitanya's mood in observing these festivals. So I will read from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Please repeat after me. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya.
We read from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 11, the Beda Kirtan Pastimes. Text 61. Raja re prabodhya bhatta gela nila jaya snana yatra dine prabhura ananda hridaya. On the day of Lord Jagannath's bathing ceremony, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy at heart. Actually, according to the Skanda Purana, the Snan Yatra Day is the birth anniversary of Lord Jagannath on the Vedic calendar. Generally, Lord Jagannath is in the temple, and on the Snan Yatra Day, he's brought out of the temple and placed on a pavilion in public view and bathed. Text 62. Snana yatra deki prabhura haila bada sukha ishwareira anasvare paila bada dukha. Who knows what sukha means? Yes?
Happiness.
Yes, happiness. And who knows what dukkha means?
Yes.
After seeing the bathing ceremony of Lord Jagannath, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very happy. But when Lord Jagannath retired after the ceremony, Lord Chaitanya became very unhappy because he could not see the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. After the bathing ceremony of Sri Jagannath, which takes place just a fortnight before the Rath Yatra ceremony, the body of the Jagannath deity is repainted. And this takes just about a fortnight to complete. This period is called Anavasara. There are many who visit the temple to see Lord Jagannath regularly every day. And for them, his retirement after the bathing ceremony is unbearable. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt Lord Jagannath's absence from the temple very much. Here, devotees will also feel separation from Lord Jagannath. But their feelings of separation are mitigated by the darshan of Sri Sri Radha Kalachandri and Sri Sri Gaurini Thai. But if you can imagine that the only deities in the temple were Lord Jagannath, and then he disappeared for 2 weeks, it would be a very distressful situation. Due to the separation of Lord Jagannath, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt great anxiety, such as the gopis felt in separation from Krishna. In this condition, he gave up all association and went to Alalanath. If someone is, you know, very distressed, they don't want to be with anyone. They just want to be by themselves or to go somewhere where they can get some relief. The devotees, following the Lord, came into his presence and requested him to return to Puri. They submitted that the devotees from Bengal were coming to Purushottama Kshetra. Purushottama Kshetra is another name for Jagannath Puri. Now, in another place in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it describes how Lord Chaitanya spent those 2 weeks of the Anavasara at Alalanath. Alalanath is a four-handed deity of Vishnu, about 12 miles from Jagannath Puri. So this raises a very significant question. Lord Chaitanya was feeling separation from Lord Jagannath in the same way that the gopis felt separation from Krishna. So how could his feelings of separation be mitigated by seeing a four-handed Vishnu form? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he was traveling in Orissa, he came to Alalanath, and one day he went into the woods. The disciples assumed he was going to heed the call of nature, and he did not come back for many hours. And the disciples became concerned. So they also went into the jungle to try to find him. And it turned out that he had gone into a very deep state of ecstasy. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to see the deity of Alalarnath, when he offered prostrated obeisances, the intensity of feeling within his body melted the stone. And even today, you can see the impressions that Lord Chaitanya's body left in the stone when he offered prostrated obeisances, which you don't find even in the Jagannath temple. So why would such strong ecstatic feelings be evoked in Alalarnath for a deity of Vishnu? The answer is that the deity of Vishnu is not actually Vishnu, but it is Krishna. And although it is confidential, but the pujaris do worship the deity with mantras for Krishna. But then the question arises, how is the Vishnu deity Krishna? How do they conclude that the Vishnu deity is Krishna? There is a case when Krishna assumed a four-handed Vishnu form. This was at the time of the Rasa dance at Govardhan. Krishna left the gopis and went to hide in the trees. And of course, when Krishna left, the gopis, eager for his association and feeling his separation, went to search for him. And as described in scripture and quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when the gopis from a distance saw that Krishna was hiding behind a bush, Krishna understood that he was going to be found. So he came out from behind the bush and assumed a four-handed Vishnu form. And when the gopis saw the complexion, because Lord Vishnu has the same kind of complexion as Krishna, so when they saw the form from a distance, they thought, oh, there is Krishna, the Lord of our life. And they went rushing towards him. But when they got close, they saw it's not Krishna, it's Vishnu. And they were really interested in Krishna. So out of formal respect, they offered namaskar, and they said, oh, Vishnu, we're looking for Krishna. Have you seen Krishna? And He remained silent, and they went looking for Krishna. So this shows that the gopis have no interest in any other form of God besides Krishna. In fact, they don't even think that Krishna is God, but they're just in love with him. And their only interest in Lord Narayan was if he could help them find Krishna. Then Krishna went back behind the bush, and Srimati Radharani came. So when Krishna saw her, he thought, oh, okay, she's going to find me too. So he came out again and assumed his four-armed Vishnu form. But when Srimati Radharani came before him, Lord Krishna, in the form of Vishnu, could not control his own ecstatic, loving feelings for Srimati Radharani, and he had to drop his extra two arms. And this shows, of course, that among all the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most excellent and beloved of Krishna. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Alalanath, he was in the mood of the gopis in separation from Krishna. But he did not see that deity as Vishnu, but as Krishna, assuming the four-armed form that he assumed at Paita, near Govardhan, when he was hiding from the gopis at the time of the Rasa dance. And thus he got solace. And as mentioned here briefly, he did not want to return to Jagannath Puri. If there's no Jagannath, then what is the use of returning to Jagannath Puri? But the devotees from Puri, Nityananda Prabhu, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, they informed the Lord that the devotees from Bengal were coming for the Rath Yatra. And so he should return to Puri to receive them. So reluctantly and feeling very morose in separation from Lord Jagannath, from Krishna, the Lord returned to Puri. And it's described that when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met the devotees from Bengal, they engaged in Harinam Sankirtan. And engaging in Nam Sankirtan, Lord Chaitanya's distress disappeared, because the holy name of Krishna is Krishna himself. And in the performance of Sankirtan, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu realized the presence of Krishna through the holy name. Or, in other words, the holy name is Krishna. There's Krishna, and there's Krishna as the holy name, Krishna as the deity there of Krishna. So this also gives us instruction that in feelings of separation, we can absorb ourselves in the holy name and feel the presence of the Lord and the devotees. And in that kirtan, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu forgot all of his lamentation and separation from Lord Jagannath. And then, of course, at the time of Rath Yatra, the Lord reappears. But we can save that jubilant discussion for about 2 weeks from now, when we are ready to celebrate Rath Yatra. So, this Sankirtan was not ordinary Sankirtan. It is called Prem Sankirtan because it was filled with Lord Chaitanya's love for Krishna, for the holy name. And that Prem Nam has come down through disciplic succession from Lord Chaitanya to us. And so that is not just the holy name of Krishna, but it is specifically the holy name of Krishna imbued with or infused with Lord Chaitanya's love for Krishna, the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. So chanting the holy name of Krishna is not at all an ordinary activity. It is associating with Krishna and also with Lord Chaitanya's mood of love for Krishna. And so we should take the holy name as sacred, as worshipable, just like Lord Jagannath, as worshipable as the deity of Lord Jagannath or Radha Kala Chanji, and worship it with prayers and chant with the same attention as we worship the deity with knowing that it is Krishna. All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Narottamananda Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for that wonderful class. Maharaj, I heard from His Holiness Jayasaka Maharaj that piece of marble that Lord Chaitanya had melted into is being offered to ISKCON. If we'll install it as the central deity for a temple, I was wondering if you had any details about that.
I don't. Obviously, that stone was originally in the Darshan Mandap in front of the deities. And subsequently, it was removed from the Darshan Mandap because otherwise people coming to see the deity would have been stepping on it. And so they made a separate shrine just to the side of the temple, where that stone is, but I hadn't heard that it had been offered to ISKCON.
I asked him what was the significance of Lord Chaitanya melting into the stone like that, and he told me that Lord Chaitanya wanted to show that his love for us was so great
that even if our hearts are like stone, you'll still melt our hearts.
That's very good news. That's very nice. Thank you. Yes. Mishra Bhagavan.
The one of the pastimes for Krishna's pastimes, so Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, externally seems a little different. Like in Krishna's pastime, the Muslim extremists, they feel that God is represented by death, blowing themselves up, killing others. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that he is the killer of mankind, that he's death personified in the opposite of the absolute. And we see that aspect also in Krishna's pastimes, kidnapping group meeting, and there's a lot of heads chopped off, a lot of intense that war and violence in Krishna's pastimes. But in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, it seems it's all full of this chanting, dancing. Lord Chaitanya's greeting devotees, going to temples. So it's the same Lord, but how is it that those two, what's the different manifestations of God in these different moods of pastimes?
Well, as you said yourself, the Lord assumes different moods and different appearances, and in the mood and Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, but he's in the mood of Srimati Radharani, in the mood of a devotee of Krishna, the best devotee of Krishna. And also the time was different. Krishna came at the end of Dwapara Yuga and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came toward the beginning of Kali Yuga. And that's just his nature. Once one disciple in Los Angeles asked Srila Prabhupada that, like Rupa Goswami prays, Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate, that Lord Chaitanya is the most munificent incarnation of Krishna, even more merciful than Krishna himself. So he asked Srila Prabhupada, how is that possible? And Srila Prabhupada replied, that's just his mood, that's just his nature. But the one thing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cannot tolerate is an offense against his dear devotee. He cannot tolerate it, and in the pastime with Jagai and Madhai, he was ready to kill them because of their offense against Nityananda Prabhu. But when, after Madhai smashed that pot against the forehead of Nityananda Prabhu and blood was coming out of his forehead and dripping down his clothes and soaking his clothes with blood, he was ready to strike him again. And Nityananda Prabhu, although he was drenched with blood and blood was still flowing from his forehead, he was still approaching Madhai. That I don't mind the pain of the wound on my head. I don't feel the pain of the wound on my head to be significant at all. But what pains me is that you are misusing your human form of life. and missing the opportunity to accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. Even then, Madhai was so wild that he was ready to strike him again. And at that stage, Jagai intervened and he said, "No, no, Madhai, don't strike him. Can't you see he's a genuine saintly person? He's approached you. He doesn't care about anything. He just wants to help you. What good would be gained by killing such a saintly person?" So meanwhile, you know, the news went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he came and he summoned his Sudarshan Chakra, and he was ready to kill the offenders. So Lord Nityananda tried to restrain him. He said, "No, they have hurt my Nityananda. I cannot tolerate this." And he was still going to kill them. And then Nityananda Prabhu said, "But Jagai, he stopped Madhai. When Madhai was going to strike me again, he stopped him." Then Mahaprabhu's mood changed. And he said, "Oh, you have defended my Nitai. I forgive you." And not only that, but he blessed him. He touched him, embraced him, and blessed him with Krishna Prem. But he was still angry at Madhai, and he was ready to kill him. And Madhai protested that, "Jagai and I have done everything together. Whenever we burned down a house, we did it together. Whenever we looted people, we did it together. Whenever we raped women, we did it together. We did everything together. Why are you delivering him and not me? I also want the same thing that you gave him. I also want that Krishna Prem." And Mahaprabhu said, "No, I will not forgive you." And he said, "But in other incarnations, you've delivered so many demons who blasphemed you and attacked you." And Mahaprabhu said, "Yes, that's true. But you didn't blaspheme me or attack me. You have blasphemed and attacked my Nitai, and I cannot forgive you for that." So then he said, "Well, what can I do?" And he said, "Well, if Nitai forgives you, then I will forgive you." So then he offered obeisances, surrendered, prostrated himself, surrendered to Nitai. And then Mahaprabhu said to Nitai, "If you actually forgive him," and remember, the blood is still flowing, his cloth is completely soaked with blood. He said, if you actually forgive him, then you should embrace him." And then Nitai embraced him. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "All right, I forgive you, and I will give you the same love, the same Krishna Prem that I gave to Jagai." So, although in general his mood is very liberal and merciful, but when it comes to offending a devotee, he doesn't forgive. In fact, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, delivered Jagai and Madhai and awarded them Krishna Prema. I mean, this is unprecedented. In other incarnations, the Lord would give liberation to the demons that he killed. But in this incarnation, he gave them Krishna Prema. And Jagai and Madhai were not ordinary demons. We could discuss more about how atrocious they were, but they were not ordinary demons. And he delivered them and gave them Krishna Prema. So after that, there was a great kirtan at Srivasa, as usual. And Jagai and Madhai were welcomed into the association of intimate devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and everyone was dancing in a very mad state of ecstatic love and bumping into each other and embracing each other. And then, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you know, no one should have any bad thoughts about Jagai and Madhai after this. Whatever horrible things they have done, I have accepted their sinful reactions. Just see. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, showing how he accepted all of their sinful reactions, his body became black from the sinful reactions. And he asked Advaitacharya, "What do you see?" And Advaitacharya, in his own mood, he said, "I see Shamsundar." So everyone was very distressed because a beautiful Gauranga had become black with all of these sinful reactions. And they were pleading, "We want to see your beautiful form as Gauranga. Well, you know, we don't want your body to be black with all the sinful reactions." So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "All right, but those reactions have to go somewhere. Where will they go?" Then he said, "Wherever there are offenders to devotees, that's where those sinful reactions will go." So there are many, many incidents that show that as liberal and merciful as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, the one thing he will not forgive is Vaishnavapura. Just the other day we observed Srivas Pandit's appearance day. And as you know, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would perform his kirtan at night at Srivas Pandit's home, only his most confidential pure devotees were allowed. Other people were not allowed. And they burned with envy. They couldn't take it. And some were Brahmins, and they thought, "How can we be excluded?" So one of them, Gopal Chakravarti, he, to take revenge against Srivas Pandit, he placed all the paraphernalia for the worship of Durga, Bhavani, on his front steps, along with a jug of wine. So when Srivas Pandit opened the door and saw all the paraphernalia for the worship along with the wine. He immediately called for the village elders. And he said, I want you to see what kind of a person I really am. Just see. Secretly, I am worshiping Goddess Bhavani and drinking wine and doing all sorts of things. So, of course, they understood that someone had done this mischief. And that Gopal Chakravarti, who had framed him, he was struck with leprosy, like immediately. And he knew he was getting the reaction for offending Shivas Pandit. So a few days later, he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passing by, and he approached him that somehow he knew, in that condition, he knew that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he approached him and he said, I know who you are. I know that you're Krishna. So please relieve me from this terrible, painful disease of leprosy. And, and Mahaprabhu said, no, I won't. And he said, the same type of argument that, in your other incarnations, you delivered so many demons, and so now I'm surrendering to you, so you should deliver me. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, I won't. Because in those other incarnations, I killed demons who blasphemed me and attacked me. But you have blasphemed and offended my devotee. So I won't forgive you. I won't deliver you. But of course that also, he was forgiven by Srivas Pandit and then delivered by Lord Chaitanya. So yeah, that's true. He is very liberal, very merciful, very kind and forgiving. But when it comes to offenses against his devotees, he takes it very seriously.
Maharaj, Lord Chaitanya taught the mood of separation from Krishna, especially in relationship to kirtan and chanting the holy names. And but we tend to think that that's only for exalted devotees, that type of mood. And we feel ourselves, we see our own impurities and disqualifications, and we feel very lowly. We think that that's not for me. That's only for advanced devotees. So does it apply to neophyte devotees who are just in the beginning stages and struggling? Or is it meant to apply to everyone, or is it only for exalted advanced devotees?
Well, when one becomes attached to something and then is separated from it, then one feels separation. So first there has to be some attachment. We experience that on the material platform all the time. So the general progression is that one becomes attached to guru first, and then gradually to know, Param Guru, the Six Goswamis, Panchatattva, Lord Chaitanya and his associates, and then Radha and Krishna and their associates. So whatever separation we can feel, we can, you know, put that mood into the kirtan. You know, separation from Tamal Krishna Goswami or some Vaishnava, we put that into the chanting. And, you know, as Iyengar Prabhu used to say, and it's actually a profound instruction, that when you chant, you should cry for Krishna. And if you can't cry for Krishna, you should cry because you can't cry for Krishna. You should cry to be able to cry for Krishna. So there should be some hankering for to do better. So hankering to do better means that there's a separation between where you are and where you want to be, or, you know, what you have now and what you want to have in the future. So that hankering, which is sort of the other side of separation, that can go into the chanting, whatever stage we're in. Even if just hankering to be able to chant with attention, our chanting can be infused with that mood. It's not something separate, but it's something that is infused in the chanting. I mean, it's sort of ordinary example, but I somehow just came to my mind that when I would come home, you know, to where I grew up, the layout was such that there's a walkway, you know, leading along the side of the garage, and then at the end of the walkway there's a door, a porch and a door. And then looking out of the house towards the front was the kitchen. And at that at the window there was the sink. And quite often when I would come home from school, and then even later when I... Anyway... So my mother would be at the sink and looking out, and then she would see me. So she'd be very happy. And then she'd start to, like, shout, "Glenn is here, Glenn is here, Glenn is here." So that repeating of the name Glenn, that was infused with her happiness that I had come. So we want to infuse the name, our chanting of the name, with some feeling. And that feeling will come from within our heart. And our hearts have, somewhere in there, they definitely have some feelings of spiritual desire, hankering, separation. And so that should, you know, be infused into the names we chant. So even if you think, "I'm too neophyte to have any feelings," then you should, like, But you have some feeling. You don't want to remain neophyte, right? You want to be able to taste the things that we read about and other devotees have tasted. So put that feeling into the chanting. Any other questions or comments? Oh! Rupanuga Prabhu will be next.
Thank you, Maharaj. The mode of separation, this is more technical, this is related to some questions that have been asked, especially from people not connected with that movement yet. The specific mood that Lord Chaitanya had is there is a separation that they do. There is a Shruti Shastra and the Smritis. And they're saying the Shrutis don't promote this specific mood as much as, or rather, there is no mention of it, and I'm not so sure I have it. But try to do research, really, there is not much information that I'm getting. Specifically, the Vedas and the Upanishads are talking about this specific mood that Lord Chaitanya has, or the specific mood that Gaudiya Vaishnavas have of service in the mode of separation. That is more accurate in the Puranas. And he said the Puranas are more explanations of Vedas, so where did he get this specific mood from? Where is this specific thing coming from? How do we answer that question?
Well, the 87th chapter of the 10th canto are the prayers by the personified Vedas, the Shruti Gana. Now, I never really read the prayers with that question in mind, but they are the Shruti and they are offering prayers to Krishna, and they actually became gopis. And you couldn't become a gopi without having a strong desire for Krishna, which means without feeling separation, not having Krishna. I mean, you know, I'm sure that an acharya with the eyes to see would be able to see it in the Shrutis. But there are very few people who are actually proper students of the Shruti, and that could apply to the people who are raising this question. But because we don't know the Shruti that much, we can't challenge them. But they probably don't know much. I mean, I've seen it all the time, even with the Bhagavad Gita. But because we know the Bhagavad Gita, so when we're preaching and people make up something from the Bhagavad Gita, or, you know, we can, it happens all the time. They'll say, you know, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, and they'll make up something. And we say, well, where in the Bhagavad Gita does it say that? And say, well, I don't know, but it's there. I know it's there. And they're just bluffing. And the Bhagavad Gita is only 700 verses. I remember when we were first staying at Juhu, and we wanted to, like, have a Janmashtami. It was like, just the deities were just in that moved into that little shed, and but I had been going like door to door in the Juhu scheme and making life members, and so it was literally like, I think like 3 days before Janmashtami, he said, we have to do something big, even though we're just, you know. So we decide, well, we'll just go to our friends and ask them. So just like that, I was going, and it was in the evening, and this one man, Sri Krishna Kapoor, had like a huge mansion. There are a lot of big mansions in the Jew scheme. And he was having a party with everything. And, you know, when I had met him, I think I was probably pretty naive too, but when I met him, I thought, like, you know, he's like really pious and pure. And but there was definitely much more culture than now. So even though he did indulge in those things, there was some culture. So, like, you know, he invited me in and he sat down next to me and welcomed me, and I said, Mr. Kapoor, I'm surprised. I didn't expect to see you indulging in these things. And he said, well, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, hey Arjun, it doesn't matter what you eat. So, yeah, I really doubt that these people who say it's not in the Shrutis, they know much about the Shrutis. And you could do it in reverse and say, it is there. Haven't you read? You don't seem to have read very thoroughly. It's there. And then see what they say. Yes.
Maharaj, Bhaktivedanta Das Maharaj was commenting on a question, a similar question, and he was referring to the difference between the worship of Vishnu and the worship of Krishna, and he was saying that so much of the Shruti and Vedic literature emphasizes the mood of awe, reverence, and the grandeur and the magnificence of God, so that one, when they come to the higher platform of worshiping God and Krishna, they don't fall into that offensive mentality of thinking that it's an that their love is ordinary. So he, you know, this is the famous example of the court, the judge in the courtroom and the judge at home. But that was his emphasis. And he was giving them the example of the president. He said, just like if someone doesn't know who the president of the United States is, you take all their activities as just normal. But as soon as you know that, oh, this person is the president of the United States, then when you see that loving relationship that one, you know, the president may have with his family, you don't see it in the same respect. So he was giving that type of answer. I was wondering if you had some comments or insight into that.
Well, the principle is correct, that we have to begin from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, really, we should begin with the Bhagavad Gita, Ishopanishad Bhagavad Gita, and then, like, first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is transcendental. He existed before the cosmic manifestation. And after the cosmic manifestation winds up, he will continue to exist. We need to know that. Otherwise, we will take it cheaply. I mean, we could take it like material, or we could even take it as like stories, just nice stories. I I had a very interesting talk with His Holiness Radhanath Swami a few years ago. And he was very concerned about the proliferation of artwork showing very intimate scenes of Radha and Krishna. Intimate, like Krishna serving Radharani's feet. And, Jayadev Goswami, who was composing Gita Govinda, he was seeing Krishna's pastimes in his meditation, but when he saw Krishna sort of bowing down at the feet of Radharani, he couldn't continue. Like, how is it possible? Krishna's the Lord of Lords, and he closed his book, he just couldn't accommodate it. So when you really understand Krishna's position, you appreciate that he is the Lord of Lords. Ekala Ishvara Krishna Arsa Britya. He's the only master and all others are his servants. And Radhanath Swami was saying, yes, we know philosophically that Krishna is conquered by love. We know that. And we know that Radharani is the greatest lover of Krishna. But to have all these paintings sort of in the market, showing Krishna like serving Radharani's feet or Krishna shedding tears for, he felt it was too explicit and that it didn't really sort of preserve the dignity of Krishna's position. So, we really do need to offer Krishna the best, sort of the mood of opulence.
Okay.
In the mood of opulence, it's not like we're going to offer, Krishna's just a coward boy, so just go out and pick some twigs and, we offer. I think that's an important point. And, the other day I was chanting and I heard some really loud talking from the pujari quarters. Really loud. So I went back to see what was happening, and it was all about service. Who was going to do the service? But I was thinking, and they're just right next to the deities. I was thinking, if it was Tamal Krishna Goswami who was there, would they be having that, it was all very good-natured and good-hearted, and it was all about service, but would they have been, speaking so loudly? No, because they wouldn't have wanted to disturb him. So we have so many sort of, atheistic, I don't know, I'm not the one to point the finger, but so we really do need to get the basics. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The deity is Krishna. The holy name is Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna. And that other level is very high and it's very confidential. But we have it. It's in our scriptures. It's in the Krishna book. once one disciple asked Srila Prabhupada that, you know, we're supposed to go through the first 9 cantos before we get to the 10th canto. But you gave us the Krishna book very early in the history of the movement. And he said, well, sometimes the parent, to get the child to eat the rest of the meal, will have to give him the sweet first. And another time he commented to me that the Krishna book is pastimes with the philosophy so skillfully woven into it that you don't even realize you're reading philosophy. But anyway, did you want to say something?
The point that you made about sound in the Pujara, even sometimes, like for example, I'll be dressing Radhika Lachanji, and the devotees will start talking, you know, and I can't concentrate on the deeds. And I'm just listening to them, and I'm talking about, you know, whatever they need to do or something that's going to happen during the day. And so forth. And it starts to drain my energy away from actually, like, focusing on the details of the deity worship. And even I found that to be true. Even sometimes someone will come and be chanting mantras. Mm-hmm. And they'll be chanting mantras, you know, Ishvara, such a nanavira. And it's like, I feel like, okay, you sit here in the middle of the altar and Radha Kalachandra can move over here on the side. You know, it becomes like a total distraction, even in the name of chanting or the name of mantra or the name of service. I find it becomes like that. I'm just saying personally, and I'm not very advanced in spiritual life, but I experience that.
Well, the pujaris are dear to the Lord, so we have to be careful also.
Hare Krishna. I heard you mention offenses earlier in your lecture. And I had a question. When you said, when we were speaking about it, it hit me that the elephant offense might be where we really decided we're just going to offend somebody, we're angry, or it's a conscious thing. But what about the small little offenses that we commit against each other all day, all week long? Do those build up in such a way that it prevents us from being as committed to our sadhana as we want to be?
Well, it really depends on our mood. In other words, what we're focused on when we do commit these little offenses. Not to minimize the value of prasad, but say, for example, you're rushing to get prasad, and without meaning to do any harm to anyone, you step on someone's toe or something. And then the other is you're rushing to get to the deity area to do your service, and in rushing you step on someone's toe. But we should be careful. We should be careful. I mean, sometimes you're in a hurry, you know, you can't, like, there's a fire, you know, you're rushing to, like, put out the fire, and in the course of it you step on someone's toe, so, you know, that could be forgiven if it's really. But sometimes we're rushing, but we don't have to rush that much. We should try to be careful and do something to, like, mitigate the whatever offense or misunderstanding. But it is a fact that something done unconsciously still brings an effect. like that story of Rupa Goswami was in meditation on Krishna's pastimes, and in his mind he was seeing a pastime that was very humorous, like there was Hasirasa, so he sort of laughed. And just at that time, a sadhu who had a physical deformity was passing by, and at that time, completely wrapped in meditation, Rupa Goswami laughed. And that sadhu thought, oh, he's making fun of me. He's laughing at me because of my deformity. So he was very upset, and he went to Sanatana Goswami that how is this possible that he's, you know, he could be so cruel that he laughed at me. And meanwhile, Rupa Goswami's meditation on Krishna's pastimes broke. And he also couldn't understand why. So he went to Sanatana Goswami to confide in him. I was meditating on Krishna's pastimes and my concentration broke and I couldn't meditate anymore. So then the whole truth came out. And that sadhu, he also felt repentant. That, oh, I thought, you know, I wrongly thought that Rupa Goswami was mocking me, but he wasn't. So I committed an offense against him. And so we should try. But, you know, when we're in, in a war, like a war against Maya, we may not be able to observe every little etiquette, but if the general tenor of the relationship is proper, then if there's some little thing, devotees will understand, it just happened, it doesn't really mean. But again, like Gaur Nitai, they don't take offenses so much, and so serving Gaur Nitai, serving the Sankirtan movement, preaching, then that washes away a lot of it. But we will become, as part of that purification, we'll become more conscious and more careful. Now it's another dilemma because Rupa Nuga had his hand up a long time ago. Nityananda Prabhu is the temple president. So. All right, thank you, Nityananda Prabhu. You saved us.
Maharaj, you spoke about feelings of separation, and I just want to thank you for coming and helping to alleviate our feelings of separation from our own spiritual master. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to ask you regarding this person who attended, was it Srivas?
Yes.
Srivas. It seems very regrettable that many persons commit offenses. I'm thinking about materialists, and they get their reactions at some time, perhaps in the future, and they never make the connection between what they have done wrong and the reactions they're getting. They just feel that this is, God is being unfair to me or something. And I wonder, why is it that maybe Krishna has set up this material world so that people don't realize at the moment of their offenses that that they get the reactions and then they make a connection? Why is that? It seems that it would make for a much more peaceful world if people could understand immediately that they made an offense, just as this person did offending Srivas Thakur.
Well, Gopal Chakravarti Srila Prabhupada comments, he had the good quality of simplicity. Even though he did commit the offense, but he had that quality of simplicity, and somehow he knew Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he was merciful and delivered so many offenders in the past, and he had the good quality. But if someone is sort of envious and angry, and they're punished for being envious and angry, they could become more envious and angry. So it's each case is different, but Gopal Chakravarti, he did have that good quality of simplicity. But the idea of delivering reactions to Vaishnava aparads is to stop the person from committing Vaishnava aparads. Both to protect the devotees from offenses and to stop the offenders from committing more offenses. But sometimes they make the connection. And it really depends on their piety. They may not have a clear sense of Krishna consciousness, but if they know they've offended a devotee, means they know the person was a devotee and they did something offensive to the person, and then they have some reversal or some setback, they may make that connection. There are cases. And then they repent and they come closer to Krishna consciousness.
Thank you very much. Mark, this point you're making about the Shrutis, and you're saying that, as devotees, we should understand the essence. Because understanding the essence actually allows us to explain things in a way that people will understand, even though they may be opposing us. So, the other day, situation, when I was in Fiji, we have one of the most powerful Hindu organizations is called the Sanatana Dharma Hindu Sabha. So, they had a scholar there who was like one of the chief priests as well. So, he brought up this point that where you should be. Does it explain that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? This very same point in a different light. So we were saying to him that at that time I was young, so it was like, we're challenging as well, they're challenging, we're challenging, It just come back, the same mood is there. And so I said, if Hindi is the same, I said, you're like the Aluka Pata. Basically, what it means is that the potato with eyes, but it cannot see. And the essence is that the Bhagavad Gita is when Krishna is speaking, when the Lord is speaking, that is called Shruti. If the Lord is speaking, then that is Shruti. So the Lord is saying that this time I spoke to Krishna, to Arjuna, because he is my friend and devotee. So really, unless you are a friend and devotee, you will not understand what the truth is. So there also he says that if you want to understand this truth, then you have to accept, you have to approach a person, a spiritual master, who has seen the truth. Not a person who is blind, because, blind following the blind, this process that you're enunciating where you say you've understood the Vedas, and because of the Vedas, you have this understanding of the four, the Varnashrama system in India. I said, look what it led to. Look at what the system has led to now. In India, there's chaos based on Varnashrama, as you have understood it, because your understanding is this type of understanding, the understanding of the eyes of the potato. This is not actually seeing. To actually see, you have to approach a person who has seen the truth and who comes in parampara. So then, now you'll have either fixed to a brain, the brain fixed to a heart. Now the system is actually working. Now you can actually see. And then you will understand. But your arguments are really based on a philosophy of, I want to become a doctor, so I go to the medical school, I read the books in the medical library, and now I think I'm a doctor, and I'm going to do brain surgery on somebody. Well, you're going to kill people, just like right now you're spiritually killing people in India by this process. And it is, you know, you're very fortunate that Prabhupada came and rescued us from this terrible, terrible place. You know? So really, you consider yourself a leader, you're a high priest, the Sanatana Dharma Pratinidhi Sabha is a very important, but you're actually shaming Sanatana Dharma. You need to stop this nonsense. You need to actually learn from people who know what they're talking about. And there are many nice such Maharajas who come to our temple and visit Fiji. Why don't you visit with them and surrender? It was very fortunate. He actually decided that was the right thing to do. So he took shelter of Gurudev and he started changing his own lectures. He started saying, actually Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's possible for us to do that. We have to smash them back and they smash us. If we don't, then what happens is that they think that we really don't know anything. Yeah. We're just fools and we're just going to say anything we like because we're fanatic about something. We're not fanatical. These are statements by the Supreme Lord Himself. That is Shruti. You don't know Shruti, why not learn Shruti from somebody who knows Shruti? As opposed to just, you know, barking out there and thinking that you know so much. Where it actually, you know, it's like they're saying in English, it's better to shut up and be thought a fool than open your mouth and prove the fact. But that's what they're really doing, they're proving the fact that these actually fools and rascals who are speaking like this. Sorry.
Bye. If you dare.
So one of the events that happened during Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's time was when the scholars at Govindji's temple decided that they were not going to allow the worship of Sri Govindji because by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas in the way that they were doing it, because we did not have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. And till you have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. And so the story goes on in the Vedanta. Then decides that Govindji actually decides the commentary to do it. And so we have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. So stepping back, essentially what I feel something that could be part of is, and as preachers, and specifically because of whom there's so much into the missionary spirit, in addition to what Nityananda Prabhu actually just clarified, it would help to support if we did do a research. It's even on Govinda Bhaksha, for example, on the commentaries that our own acharyas have actually given to prove that the Shrutis actually do talk about this. Here's a commentary on the Vedanta Sutras that does talk about it. This is so we haven't even Bhagavad Gita, for example, and Srila Prabhupada mentions the Smriti. So several times. And it becomes difficult on the teaching field when there are people like someone who is well versed in the Shrutis of the Kamala. Actually, this is something that we have something that says, even in a small booklet format, that this is what it should be. Actually, saying that this is what the Govinda Bhashya is coming from. That would, you know, keep things at a level that is.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Very good idea. I mean, in Bhagavad Gita 10:10, that area, Aham Sarvasya Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada quotes a number of references from. Yeah. Okay. So Narottam, you've been waiting very patiently.
Oh, thank you.
My question has to do with the extreme reactions that are, the biographers have written about Vaishnava Parada. And, for example, Gopal Chakravarti, he puts out this set of, for Durga Puja and the wine to sustain the reputation of Sri Das Thakur. But yet, he suffers with like this death-like disease of leprosy. So the question comes up, or like for example, another example would be like with Lord Chaitanya and Chota Haridas. It seems like he's done nothing. He just wants to go back for rice from and the ladies in the band, Vaishnava, older woman, and yet he's getting this severe reaction to the point where he commits suicide. So my question has to do with that the reactions to the offenses. At least in those two examples, my question is, how do you accommodate such severe reactions for something that seems, if somebody puts something is saying, like, I think what Sri Das Thakur did was great, and he just went to the older men in the community and said, look, this is what I'm like, and everyone's probably laughing about it. But that's my question. My question is, it seems that there's a severe reaction, even much, much more than, you would normally accommodate for some type of misbehavior in that regard. And I'm wondering how you explain that, because it's been brought up to me before, and and I'm at a loss actually as to how to explain that.
That's a very good point. In fact, when I was speaking about how Lord Chaitanya was so liberal and merciful, except on Vaishnava Parada, I did think of the incident with Chota Haridas. And that incident, as Narottamananda Prabhu mentioned briefly, is Chota Haridas was a devotee of Lord Chaitanya, who was a very good singer. And he went to beg some rice, ask some rice from a very advanced devotee, elderly lady. But it appears that she had a young daughter, and so this junior Haridas, Chota Haridas, who was in the renounced order, maybe had some little thought about her, lusty. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reacted very severely and, said that I will not see him again. And then Chota Haridas, feeling there was no hope for him, he, went to the Triveni, the confluence of the Ganges and Yamuna and Saraswati, and drowned himself. And when the devotees brought the news to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, good. But Chota Haridas would come in a subtle body to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and sing for him. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was having this relationship with him that no one else could see. But still, at the end of that chapter in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada quotes an elaborate discussion by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that how is it that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the most merciful incarnation of Godhead, acted in such a severe way with Chota Haridas. And he lists a number of points. And one point is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was acting as the Acharya, and as the Acharya he had to enforce a certain standard. And if he had been if he had shown leniency, it could be taken as an opportunity for others to deviate more. I mean, we saw it with Srila Prabhupada. On some points, he was just very strict. He just didn't want to leave any scope for any deviation in the future. So that was like the main thrust of it, why he was so so strict with Chota Haridas. But then he says that we can also learn how merciful Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is even to a devotee who does deviate. Because in the end, although it was in a subtle form, because he gave up his body, but in the end, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did accept him. Although he said, you know, he can never come into my company again, but he did accept him. So, yes, that incident stands out as a case where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was exceedingly severe and seemingly out of character. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta explains why.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I remember in the verses, it's described that he gained a spiritual body. Mm-hmm. And you're saying a subtle body, meaning like a ghost-like body, which would be the normal reaction for committing suicide.
Oh, no. I didn't mean that.
That's what my question was. So it was, because he described it as a spiritual body that resembled a Gandharva. So I was wondering, maybe I misunderstood that.
No.
An actual spiritual form?
I mean, there was a rumor, or a question, let's say. There was a question to Srila Prabhupada about a disciple of Prabhupada's who was thought to perhaps have drowned himself in the Triveni as an atonement for a deviation from the renounced order. And so they asked Srila Prabhupada what would be his destination. And Srila Prabhupada said it depends on the consciousness. That if he gave up his body in the mood of separation, thinking of, say in the case of Junior Haridas, he was thinking of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would go back to Godhead. But if he gave up his body just as like a type of atonement, thinking of himself and getting free from reactions, then he'd have to take birth again.
Maharaj, I'm sorry to see trouble with this. In that pastime, you just mentioned how Junior Dev Haridas lusted even momentarily over the lady's daughter.
Madhavi,
thank you. And I don't recall that in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
No, it's not in Chaitanya
Charitamrita. That's why I wanted to ask you, because I'd never heard that before. Where is that reference?
Well, I read a discussion of it, I believe, in Krishna Katamrita, which is published by Madhavananda Prabhu. He's a very, thorough and scrupulous scholar. I don't remember where he got it from, but, you know, he's a good scholar. And, it's not in Chaitanya.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to clarify that because I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, no, it's, you're right.
Thank
you. Hare Krishna.
First, I just wanted to say it's so wonderful when you're here. It's rejuvenating to all of us here in Dallas. So we hope that you stay for a long time and come again and again. this writing that Srila Prabhupada has created is an international one, which means that we have, in the developing of a community and relationships and friendships, we have all of us coming from very different backgrounds, from individualistic cultures and collectivistic cultures. And in a practical sense, because of the different backgrounds that we have been raised, that every individual has been raised with, offenses are created even just in normal interactions, day-to-day interactions. From one culture, being direct and being on time is considered the way of acting. And for another culture, being upfront and direct and being on time is extremely rude. And so in my own experience and my peers' experiences, working with groups that are from different cultures, there can be so many back and forth of offenses created which impede the progression of service and preaching. And especially Vedic culture is so much more of a collectivistic endeavor. And so those who come from individualistic backgrounds or other cultures that don't match up with the Vedic culture paradigm, they become discouraged and, you know, maybe even because of the differences in culture and stuff. And so this is something that I personally have been faced in working with the peers and groups that I work with in my service. And I'm wondering, what is your advice and guidance on how to deal with that and how to create a more unified community? If you can give us some guidance in that area.
That's a very intelligent question, because we do have people coming from different cultures who are conditioned by their cultures, and when I was a student, there was like a best-selling book called The Ugly American, and I read it. I didn't read that many contemporary books, but I read it, and the book told so many stories of Americans who went overseas with the best intentions to help the local people in different cultures, but because they didn't understand the cultures, they just ended up offending the people. And it really made me understand how people from different cultures see things in different ways. Like, one point that struck me from that book is that for Americans, time is very precious. They can waste material things. I remember when I first came back to America from India, and I met some of my colleagues who had also been in India. And he was saying he was astonished by what the Americans throw in the dustbin. He said, you know, it would have the richest man in India picking through the dustbin because there were like so many good things. So the book was saying, like, for Americans, time is very precious. And if you waste their time, it's like it's a big offense. But material things aren't so precious. They throw them out. I mean, I'm astonished the things people put out on the curb. You know, they don't want it anymore, and they don't want to bother selling it, or anyone can just come and pick it up. Like, really good things. Whereas in Oriental cultures, for example, material things are very precious. You don't waste water, you don't waste electricity, you don't, you know, waste cloth or anything. But they have time. They have all the time in the world for you. So it's just very different conceptions from different cultures. As far as how to work with people from different cultures together in a practical sense, I might have to refer this question to Nityananda Prabhu. because most of what I do with devotees is chanting and hearing about Krishna, and then it doesn't matter what their cultural conditioning is. But he deals more on a practical level where these issues might come to the forefront. Would you like to... And he always... Well, I won't... No. Yes. Yes.
I think, you know, you answered the question because you said that, you know, that we come from different conditionings. And basically, it is our conditioning. And so we allow in our spiritual life, even for each of us, me individually, if I allow my conditioning to get in the way, then I could miss the point of Krishna consciousness, which is to give up one's conditioning so that one can actually accept, you know, the deities and the devotees, the community of deities and devotees, in a manner that's conducive to my spiritual advancement. And I think that's where the answer really is. I mean, you know, one can go very much deeper into this topic and talk about it all day, because that's what we're trying to do here, which is build a community. But seeing what Srila Prabhupada did in Dallas, how Ramakrishna Maharaj and yourselves have done, bringing devotees to focus on their spiritual life, focus on the rest of whatever they have to do, so that it actually promotes their chanting, promotes their spiritual life, is where the answer really lies. It actually allows us to come together and then to avoid, like you said today, avoiding offenses against devotees. It actually builds the community, because then we understand what we have to do. Because the different circumstances that we face with is very complex. It's an extremely complex situation.
Mm. Yeah.
And each circumstance can be very different. You're dealing with one devotee and you think that because we dealt with another devotee who may be from the exact same culture, and we think that, you know, that the same thing applies, and it doesn't apply. Because that is an individual. And that individual processes differently. So, you know, to have compassion towards other living entities and understand that, you know, they have their way of reasoning, and to communicate with them and discuss and speak to the authorities if it can't be sorted out. I mean, it's basically how we're sorting things out. But I think it's going back to the essence again, what is the essence of our program? As a community, what are we meant to do? What are we meant to push forward? If we have these goals in our hearts, firmly embedded in our hearts, then the other issues that come up actually do get sorted out. But when those things are not firmly embedded in our hearts, then the issues that are not so important become the very issues of our lives, and then we get caught up in that sort of whirlpool, you know, that it's like dog chasing its tail situation. It doesn't sort itself out.
Yeah. I would say there's two parts to it. Because devotees ask Srila Prabhupada what to do when there's differences among devotees. And Srila Prabhupada said that they should engage in common activities. And so our common activity is chanting and hearing about Krishna. So that's one approach. And he said that they should think of themselves as the servant of the servants. If each devotee thinks of himself as the servant of the servants, then there will be harmony. But the other side is just to discuss these cultural differences openly, so people are aware that what they're bringing is their own cultural conditioning. It's not better or worse than someone else's. It's just different. And help them understand each other better from the material point of view, conditioning. Like once Bhurijan Prabhu commented that that Indians are very concerned about the mind, so they don't want to do anything that would like hurt. hurt another person's feelings. They're like very careful about not hurting another person's feelings. But they're not so careful about the body. So they throw the trash out on the street, and they're not so careful about whatever, filtering the water, and it's just a different emphasis. I remember when I first came to India, of course, in a way, I guess it was an advantage to be naive, but I was phoning and making appointments with big people. And I'd phone, and they'd say, we try to get them early at home because it was much harder later at the office. So I'd phone early. He's in the shower. Phone back in 10 minutes. Phone back in 10 minutes. He's getting dressed. Phone back in 10 minutes. Phone back. He's having breakfast. Phone back. Oh, he just left for the office. So, in a way, it was good to be naive because I would keep trying. I was believing the excuses. So I thought, well, maybe it's just bad luck. But then when it kept happening, and then I consulted some of the other devotees, they said, well, I think they're just trying to avoid you. And I said, well, why can't they just be straightforward about it? Well, that's just not the way they do things here. So it's something like you learn and then you understand, okay, that's just the way they do things, and they hopefully learn that's the way we do things, and we see it for what it is. It's not any bad feelings towards anyone, it's just different, cultural conditionings that we're ultimately meant to see through and go beyond. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Gurudev ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.